Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. Ed here. I am once again joined by co-host Stephen Feldman. Stephen, welcome to the show. We just saw each other last week. I was in London, and we had, in my opinion, possibly one of the best GeoMob events of all time.
I concur with that, Ed. It was a brilliant evening. The content was good. The people were fantastic. The vibe was great. Yeah, it was fabulous. And it was also great to catch up with you because we haven't seen each other through the summer. Sink a couple of beers together. And yeah, it was a fantastic event.
Yes, so, and I agree with everything you said. The mood was great. It was also, I think, easily our largest turnout ever. We have a fantastic picture up on the Mastodon account that shows the crowd outside of the pub, and it truly is a mob. And actually, not everyone was actually in the picture. So, yeah. Well,
and the bar bill proves it.
Yeah, the and I think a big reason for that for the big turnout it was, of course, that we were celebrating OpenStreetMap's 20th birthday. All of the talks had to do with OpenStreetMap, and I don't mind saying, I think we had a very good mix of looking back, but also looking forward at some of the new technologies and new things happening in the OpenStreetMap community. So, what was your impression, Stephen, of the talks?
I thought it was an amazing collection of speakers. I mean, first of all, the diversity of topics, you know, from humanitarian OpenStreetMap to imagery, looking back, you know, both Andy and Mookie looking back, Yus talking about his experience. It was very personal and very technical at the same time. So it was a great combination. And it sort of made me think about reappraise OpenStreetMap a little bit. Because for me, you know, I sort of tracked OpenStreetMap right the way from the beginning. And I've been involved with the project to a greater extent in the past than I am now. But I've become a bit jaded about OpenStreetMap. You know, I just take it for granted. You know, there's this wonderful map. It keeps getting improved. It gets more and more accurate, more and more current. And when you sat and you listened to all these speakers about what they were doing with OpenStreetMap, some of the history, it just made you realize what an awesome social and cultural project it is, as well as a technical project.
Well, you know what, Stephen? I've said this before, but I am continually struck. I know of no other project like this that is truly global in its scope, but also so decentralized in the sense that, like, you know, all kinds of different people and organizations, you know, from, you know, one of the talks was by Saeed from Meta, so one of the biggest tech companies in the world. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have, you know, just, you know, individual volunteers, and you have people all around the globe contributing to one database. So, you know, it's very different. Obviously, it's often compared with Wikipedia, but Wikipedia is language specific, right? I mean, of course, you know, all the English speakers speak contribute to the English Wikipedia, and the French speakers to the French Wikipedia. I mean, they're doing the same thing, but kind of next to each other, if you see what I mean. Whereas an OpenStreetMap, I mean, it's truly the world. I mean, everyone anywhere can contribute to one central database.
Well, in a way, it seems that, like, the database is the thing that ties all the people together, because they're contributing differently.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I don't want to make the classic joke about the Germans and the park benches and the trees, but, you know, different countries focus on different things, you know, and you listen to Pete talking about humanitarian OpenStreetMap and slum mapping, and the concerns in those communities are very different to the concerns in a major Western city, for example, but it all exists in this same database because it's, the structure is so flexible that it can meet everybody's concerns without them having to go off and do something different in another project.
That's what's so amazing, actually. And, you know, all these different communities or interest groups or, you know, topical groups, you know, are using all kinds of different tools, you know, ranging from, you know, we saw you know, AI mapping and all this kind of things, all the way through to, you know, people using the most basic, you know, data entry, just as it was done 20 years ago. So, by the way, he didn't go into great detail about it, but one thing that one of my favorite talks was Mookie's, where he looked back on the early days of MStreetMap, but then he also showed, you know, he was involved in research around crowdsourcing and this type of thing, well, even before OpenStreetMap. And he's still doing that, you know, with his citizen science stuff and, you know, his projects around helping illiterate people map, or, you know, he put up a slide at the very end of the current project of people mapping via WhatsApp and things like that. So, I mean, it's just fascinating, the diversity of the tools, the communities, the use cases, and it's all going into one project.
Yeah, and it's brilliant. And I remember going to State of the Map, probably one of the first times that I met you, in fact.
This was in Amsterdam or in which one?
I think it was Amsterdam or Girona. I can't. Which came first? Amsterdam, I think.
I didn't go to Girona. I only went to Amsterdam.
Right, so I think it was Amsterdam. And I gave a talk, and I was talking about whether the community was sustainable, because people grow older, they have families, you know, you and I are an example of that. You get older, you have less time to go around on your bicycle gathering GPS traces and things like that. And I questioned whether it was sustainable.
I do remember that talk, so it must have been in Amsterdam. Yeah.
And I was completely wrong. I mean, so wrong. And for our listeners, you don't often hear Stephen Feldman say, "I was wrong."
Well, first of all, many people, even as their life situation has changed and evolved, many people stay, let's say, in touch with the project in some way, shape, or form. And actually, many of the attendees in the audience were, you know, part of that hardcore of OpenStreetMappers who have been very active for the last 20 years. But also new people joined the project. We keep coming up with new tools and interfaces of how to make it easier to contribute. Obviously now, you know, smartphones and things like that. But, you know, as presented in Anna's talk about the AI mapping and things. So, you know, and there are also always more and more use cases for the data. And, you know, one of the key thesis of OpenCage is, of course, that as companies rely on the data and understand the benefits of OpenStreetMap and the fact that they can edit and fix it, that then creates the virtuous circle where also companies have an incentive to improve the data and get their team members or, you know, their organization to contribute as well. So,
yeah. So, yeah, I think it's what we're seeing is a project that has evolved. And you look at the OpenStreetMap community now and what's going on, the tools, the applications, the way the data's being used, it's radically different to how it was 20 years ago or 15 years ago. I mean, 20 years ago, there was nothing, but 15 years ago, there was already a big database, good coverage, and it's changed dramatically, which is the dynamism of the community and probably suggests that it will sustain itself for a long time going forwards.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to the 40-year party. So we will do it again in 20 years. Maybe we'll do it in 10 years. Maybe we don't have to wait 20 years. So,
go on, give me one prediction. One prediction for 10 years forward.
For 10 years forward, first of all, right now, there's still some hesitation in some parts of the community about all these AI tools and things like that. I think that will become the norm, largely. But I also think we will, and I'm not just the AI tools in terms of, you know, image recognition and things like that, but I also think there can be a lot more done in terms of wearables and things like that. Like, why shouldn't we be able to, everyone who's riding their bike around, we should be able to get the GPS track from their bicycle or whatever, and, you know, or kind of like we do now with Strava, and use that to detect where people are going, and then say, okay, every day 100 people go along this path, there must be a road there or something, and use that to kind of autocorrect the data in some way, shape, or form. You know, obviously there's a lot to think about there in terms of human validation, and we can't just blindly trust the data. That's actually one of the reasons I really liked Anna's talk, because she showed examples where the AI image recognition worked perfectly, but she also showed many examples where it really wasn't working well. Anyway, I think clearly that's a space that's going to continue to evolve, and I think the OpenStreetMap community will embrace, slowly but steadily embrace, using that data in some way, shape, or form to correct the database in a more automated kind of way.
So I'll give you my one.
Okay.
In 10 years, the tension between corporate involvement and individual involvement will have been, if not resolved, at least reduced to a point where there is a comfortable coexistence, and corporate involvement will be a lot larger.
Yeah. You know, I think we're already seeing that in some ways, in that, you know, some countries or some communities are, they're moving forward at different speeds, right? Which, as they should be, because their requirements are very different. You know, in some countries, you have a very dense population that's very tech savvy, like in let's say Northern Europe. And in some countries you have, you know, as someone who also comes from the US, you know, if you go to Colorado, it's a very sparse population. And not all areas have a very, you know, not everywhere is Silicon Valley that has a bunch of, you know, let's say Linux geeks or whatever who, so, but you can already see. So for example, the US community is super organized. I mean, as a kind of corporate entity, and I mean, I think technically it's a charity or something, but, you know, working very heavily with the big companies and finding a way to integrate them and government entities and things like that, and doing a very good job of integrating them, using their data, working with them. And we have other communities that are, you know, live and die by the volunteer only craft mapper methodology. Even there, though, man, I mean, as I said, I see it more and more with our customers. If people depend on the data, then they want it to be correct. And when it's broken, they want to fix it. And so, and in some cases, those companies who say, look, you know, I sent my driver to the wrong place, so how do I get the driver to fix it? And I obviously I support that totally, as long as the data that is entered is correct. That's the decision point. Is the data correct? Not, is this person an employee of a company? Is this person part of a large organization? Is this person, you know, a hobbyist? Whatever, it doesn't matter, as long as the data is correct. So, one thing that was interesting, I was talking with, for example, one of the speakers, Anna. She had just come the previous week from State of the Map Nairobi. And I mean, I've never been to Africa, so I can't comment on it, but I see online, on social media, you see over the last decade, you know, what looks to me like very big, very vibrant open data communities, largely perhaps kickstarted by things like HOT and things like that. But now they now seem to be thriving and finding ways to do things locally, which obviously are going to be very different than how things are done in Europe or in the US or whatever. And that's great. That's fine.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, that was when I went to Phosphor G in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. And that's 6 years ago now. That was a joint Phosphor G and State of the Map in Africa, the first big conference in Africa, you know, and there were hundreds of local people.
Right.
Well, I say local, from the African continent, you know.
Right, right.
Who were both involved in open source, but much more so in OpenStreetMap.
Right, and just data collection.
Yeah. Because you don't need to be a massive technical expert to set up and start mapping your local area.
No, not at all. Not at all. So, and, you know, I do think that will be a key trend. It'll continue to get easier and easier, whether it's getting the imagery, whether it's better apps, whatever it is.
Mm. Yeah.
I think the tools will keep getting simpler and easier. So, anyway, big thank you to everyone who came. Of course, big thank you to our sponsors. Especially thank you to our sponsors because, you know, the bar bill was not small with such a big turnout. But I do think it was money well spent. I enjoyed it. And you hit the nail on the head. The mood in the crowd was just great. You know, lots of reminiscing about OpenStreetMap in the past, but also lots of people very excited about, you know, new projects and things going on. And you know, people from all walks of life, people from local government, people from, you know, startups. So a great mix, mix.
And a couple of shout-outs. A shout-out to Mookie, who was there at the very, very start of OpenStreetMap and mentored Steve Coast in those early years. He's also been an enormous friend to GeoMob, you know.
Right, he is the one that makes it possible that we can have the events at UCL. So, yes, full credit to Mookie. GeoMob would not be where it is today without him.
And also to our good friend Andy Allen, who took the driest of the driest of the dry topics, the open database license, and turned it into a fascinating and entertaining talk about how OpenStreetMap went from Creative Commons to ODBL. Yeah.
Yes. Congrats to Andy for a great talk, which was not just recognized by us, but also by the audience, because, of course, he won the Best Speaker Prize. So, well done. Well done.
And I'm assuming that you, as well as me, are one of the 92,000 who signed up for the new license.
I did sign up for the new license, yes, and my changes were
incorporated.
Incorporated, and I don't. It's funny because I don't. I was vaguely aware of all the discussion about the license change, but I didn't see it as such a big thing. I mean, you know, I don't know. At some point, I read an email. Someone's like, "Look, here's why we need to do this," and I was like, "Okay, great, makes sense. Let's go."
Yeah,
and I know there were people who felt strongly the other direction, and but what Andy's talk did do a good job of showing is talking about all the complexities of, you know, all the edge cases that needed to be worked out, and you know, what do you do if someone wants their data, they want their data revoked, but then other later edits depended on that data, and you know, I think I don't remember the exact number. But he said there were something like 80 different types of situations.
Yeah, it was very complicated.
That sounds like a nightmare.
I thought it was really simple. I thought you had a list of all the users all the contributors who'd signed the agreement, their data stayed. If you hadn't signed the agreement and didn't have that tick, they removed it. And I thought that was just going to be the beginning and the end of it, but it was much, much more complicated than that.
Yeah. So well done to everyone involved in that. I know. And Andy did make a great point at the very end of his talk where he talked about how anticlimactic it was that, you know, he clicked the button and then it started and then the script ran and that was gone. And years of discussion and programming and testing, all of a sudden we're done. And at the end result, there was like a 3-line blog post on the OpenStreetMap Foundation blog. And then everyone just went on about onto the next project. And maybe that is one thing that is very challenging given the international nature and the diverse nature of the OpenStreetMap community, is that it's hard to celebrate things because it's geographically spread and everyone's kind of doing their own thing, and you know, people have different cultural and historical contexts, and so as a result, you know the community as a whole doesn't, you know, celebrate enough or recognize things enough. So it was, I'm glad Andy won, and I'm glad we were able to celebrate.
Yeah. And I'm just reminded of the Y2K challenge.
Very similar. Yeah. Very similar.
Because, you know, there were loads and loads of people working in incredible detail.
Oh, I worked for like 6 months on Y2K in the lead up to it. Sure.
Yeah.
And checking all the code and making sure and everything.
And when it all was fine, 1 minute past midnight on January the 1st, 2000, you breathed a sigh of relief and you moved on, and no one realized how much money and effort had gone into trying to sort of rock solid proof against crisis happening. So.
Very similar, yeah.
Well done, Andy. Okay, so I think that's it.
Yeah, we should briefly. I'm not sure when the next London event will be, Stephen. It depends. I need to get to work on organizing that, but probably I think it won't be until after Christmas. So probably in January, we'll aim for another London event. But we are recording now on the 25th of September, so. By the time this episode comes out, there will have already been events in Edinburgh and in Lisbon.
Yep. And the week after it comes out, there'll be an event in Berlin, which I think you're attending.
Exactly. By the time this comes out, I should be in Berlin and getting ready for our next GeoMob Berlin, which is October 10th. So everyone is welcome to join us. We have a very good lineup for that evening. And then the following week, we're going to have an event back in Barcelona. Hopefully, Stephen, I really don't know what the issue is, but we continue to struggle to get speakers in Barcelona. So as of right now, we have two speakers, which frankly is not enough to do the event. I'm waiting to hear back from one other. If we have three, we're going to go forward. If we only have two, I hate to say it, there's something cultural in Barcelona where it's just hard to get people excited. So, listener, if you are out there and want to be in Barcelona on October 16th and give us a talk, please, please get in touch, because we need more speakers. And then finally, at the end of October, October 31st, I am going to be making my way to Utrecht, Stephen, where where we are going to have the first GeoMob Netherlands. So
fantastic.
Big thank you to the local organizers there, who is going to be the very first one. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm expecting it to be great. And we have what looks to be a very strong lineup of speakers for Netherlands. So come on out and join us.
And then in December, we've got Finland.
Yes. Last week I received an email from our colleagues in Finland. So this is one, Stephen, if you want to challenge yourself, if you, you know, if you want to head north in December in Finland, I feel very confident on guaranteeing that you'll have some snow that you can, you can play in or whatever, and head on up there and check out the Finnish community. So.
Okay. I'll give that consideration. I may have been in warmer climes just beforehand, but we'll see.
I guess. Anyway, what else is going on, Sim? We celebrated OpenStreetMap's 20th birthday, but I believe we have another birthday to celebrate.
Yes, not quite 20, Ed, but 6 years of Mappery.
Very nice. Very
over nice. Well 2,000 posts, something like 3,500 images. Yeah, it was Mappery's 6th birthday. A couple of weeks back now.
Congrats to you. Congrats to everyone involved. That's wonderful.
Thank you. And if you go on the site, you can browse through. We had a bumper day. I think we had, like, instead of our normal one post a day, we had about six different posts and lots of people sending us nice messages. So, yeah, it was great. What else has been happening? How about OpenCage? Any?
We, well, you know, summer is over, so we're back into it, and we're cranking away. We launched, I guess about a week ago, 10 days ago now, we launched a tool basically to make it easier for people who want to geocode files of like a CSV file from the command line. So, you know, one thing that I've come to realize, Stephen, is one of the challenges in making a tool for software developers is a lot of software developers. No disrespect to our lovely users, but a lot of software developers are not very good. So we continue to work on making tools that make it even simpler for them. And that just kind of get the job done. I guess not very good as, let's say, inexperienced or frankly, probably just busy. And they don't want to know all the details. They just want to get the project done, which mm-hmm. is fair enough. So, you know, we previously have had many different SDKs and things in all different languages and tutorials and things. But then we thought, why don't we just, rather than send people just to the tutorial and they have to write their own little tool, let's just make the definitive tool. So basically, if you're a command line warrior, you know, you can just kind of point it at a file and say, you know, geocode this file for me if it's a CSV file. And we try to be smart about, you know, if the file has some formatting issues, we try to make you aware of that and to help you fix the data and things like that. But anyway, the concept is always the same. How do we make it simpler for people to geocode? So
cool.
So yeah, if anyone please test it out. We have a tutorial video, and obviously also a written tutorial. And if anyone has feedback, of course, we'd love to hear that.
Okay, so just to finish. I've been something of an AI skeptic. Yeah. I think lots of us are. And a couple of weeks ago, something called Overture Maps GPT appeared in my Mastodon feed. And I guess if you go search for Overture Maps GPT, you'll find it. But basically, it's a sort of a variant on ChatGPT that enables you to extract data from Overture Maps.
Yeah.
Right. And Overture Maps is a pretty big database. It's sort of OpenStreetMap sized or bigger.
What this helps you formulate the queries to get the data you want.
Type a natural language query, like give me all of the points of interest or places they're called in Overture. Give me all of the places in Muswell Hill, which is the area that I live in London.
Right.
And it structures the SQL for something called a BigQuery SQL query, if you know what that is.
Yeah, anyway, it queries the database for you. It turns your human text into the correct query.
But then displays it on a map for you.
Okay.
Using something called Descartes.
Could be.
And the fact was, the first time I tried it, of course, it didn't work, and I got error messages.
Well, one question. This is online somewhere, or this is you have to have the data locally on your machine?
This is online, right? It took me a few tries to get it to work, but the bloody thing did work, and it wrote the SQL, and then Descartes runs the SQL for you and extracts the data and presents it on a map. And it's far from perfect, and most people would not bother to sort of battle through five or six iterations before they got it right. But it actually does work. And it was quite impressive. And the idea of me writing SQL to extract data from Overture maps is, you know, I wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't get around to trying right. that.
Well, I mean, I too am somewhat of an AI skeptic, but definitely there are areas where generative AI is, of course, very good. And one of those areas is kind of data reformatting. So I have format A and I want format B. In this case, format A is natural language text, so your query, and then we turn that into, you know, a very well-specified format B, which is SQL or whatever, particularly against a very specific data set, in this case Overture, where we know all the attributes of that data set and what the table names are and things like that. You know, in a case like that, of course, it can be very useful. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. I guess obviously there are still some rough edges, as you yourself said. You know, it took a few tries to get it to work, and I guess the challenge is, Stephen, the people using these tools right now, like, you know, it's kind of like you're using the AI to write the code for you or whatever. These are typically people who have the ability to check the code themselves. It's just kind of tedious, right? Mm-hmm. Or when it doesn't quite work the way they expected, they can recognize that and say, oh, wait, there's an issue here, and let me go in and see what exactly is the problem. The problem comes, you know, fast forward 5 years, 10 years, or whatever, where you have people who don't have the ability to validate the output. And you just move on to kind of blindly trusting the output.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you know, now that I think about this, of course, maybe, you know, this is just yet another layer of abstraction. And that's been the case, you know, since the start of time. Like, you know, I have to tell you, Stephen, I mean, having spent my entire career working on the internet and producing web content and things like that, I don't have the slightest clue really how a computer works. I mean, it remains complete magic to me. I never studied like computer engineering or anything like that. It's just, you know, so I guess we're just adding yet another layer of abstraction. Yeah. But I don't know. It comes back to the issue we had at OpenKit where ChatGPT was telling people that we do phone tracking, even though we don't do phone tracking, we've never done phone tracking, and the people just blindly believe it.
Yeah.
Even that frankly is another project we're working on. Hopefully we'll go live in a week or so, but
not phone tracking.
It's yet another redesign of our signup process to try to stop the phone tracking people.
Oh, right.
And even though we try to be very, very blunt about it, you know, you can tell people just don't want to read. They don't want to think. They don't want to understand. They just say, click, 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 click. Why isn't it working? And, you know, this Overture map GPT thing sounds cool, and I'll definitely play with it. And that particularly as a way for, like, exploring the data and things like that, I can imagine it's very valuable. The issue is, how do you know if it's not working? Or do you
don't.
Blindly? Yeah, I mean,
you don't.
That's where I start to get.
But
I get worried.
But every time you do an internet search, forget AI. You do an internet search on something, and you get a result back.
How do I know that's the best result? Well, frankly,
how do you even know that?
You don't. You don't. Increasingly, you can't trust search, you know, or you feel like, oh, I better check a second source or a third source, or, you know, so maybe that's just me because I'm also, you know, of an age where I can, you know, maybe when my generation dies off, that instinct will be gone because I don't know, but I don't know. That's one to keep an eye on, of course, of this transition to AI. And as I said, tying it all together, that I'm going to try to get Anna, who spoke at the at GeoMob London, try to get her here on the podcast to talk about her work on AI. And you know, as I said, what I really enjoyed about her talk was she showed the examples where it worked well, but also the examples that it worked badly and was not usable. And maybe we can explore that topic a bit more of how do you know you can trust it?
Can you know that you can trust it?
How can we trust anything? Yeah, we're moving to the age of no trust.
So. And as we descend into a sort of a metaphysical conundrum, I think that's a good point to wrap it up and say.
Let's wrap it up then, Stephen. Thanks very much for the conversation. Congrats, everyone, for a great GeoMob London, and hope to see you at a future event.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.